Support for Newsworthy comes from Enlivion, providing affordable housing and supportive services to help build strong foundations for a better future for hardworking families, seniors, and the disabled in Charlotte. More information available at enlivion.com. And from Thrivent Associate Representative Mark Hargrove. Thrivent is a financial services company helping individuals and families manage their money and plan for the future. More at mark.hargrove@thrivent.com.
From 90.7 WFAE, this is Newsworthy for Friday, May 2nd, 2025. I'm Eric Thiel. Republicans took over control of the North Carolina Board of Elections Thursday. Auditor Dave Bolick appointed three new Republican members, giving the GOP a majority on the five-member board. Steve Harrison has this report.
Republicans in the General Assembly late last year passed a law shifting appointment power from the governor, now Democrat Josh Stein, to the auditor, who's now a Republican. That moved them closer to a longstanding goal of taking control of the elections board. After the State Court of Appeals on Wednesday allowed the law to stand, Bolick quickly named three Republican appointees. Stacey Eggers IV is a current board member and will remain. Former Mecklenburg State Senator Bob Rucho and Francis DeLuca, a former president of the conservative think tank Civitas Institute, were also appointed. The State Democratic Party, which has criticized the move as a hostile takeover, has also nominated people for the remaining two slots. Bolick will pick from the party's list. The makeup of county elections boards will also change from a 3-2 Democratic majority today to a 3-2 Republican majority. It's possible the new GOP board could also replace Elections Board Executive Director Karen Brinson Bell, who was appointed by former Governor Roy Cooper. And the board still has one outstanding race to certify, the undecided contest for a seat on the state Supreme Court. Steve Harrison, WFAE News.
All public school entities in North Carolina have now certified to the U.S. Department of Education that they comply with federal Title VI laws against discrimination. The Trump administration required that certification in an April 3rd letter that advanced the Trump administration's crackdown on diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in schools and government at large. But North Carolina Superintendent of Public Instruction Mo Green said Thursday that the state submitted its certifications with a caveat. The state believes it already complies with Title VI and is not making any new interpretation of the law.
The U.S. Department's request contains broad statements about, quote, diversity, equity, and inclusion without clearly defining what specific practices might violate Title VI. This lack of clarity creates ambiguity about what we were being asked to certify.
Green said his department believed the certification request was redundant and maintained the Department of Education lacked the authority to unilaterally change rules about Title VI. He maintained the state's schools would continue to ensure fairness, remove barriers to opportunity, and make decisions based on merit and need. The U.S. Department of Education's April 3rd letter said any use of DEI programs to advance one race over another is impermissible. A Mecklenburg County Board of Commissioners committee met Thursday to talk about the local impact of federal immigration policies. Julian Berger has more.
Immigration attorney Jamila Espinosa shared recent actions the Trump administration took, like strengthening border enforcement, terminating legal statuses, and revoking student visas. Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office Counsel J. George Guise then reported on Sheriff Gary McFadden's stance on ICE cooperation and how he is following new laws that require sheriff cooperation with the agency. Robert Nesbitt of the county's Department of Health and Human Services detailed which benefits undocumented immigrants can receive through the county and what benefits they do not receive due to their status. Commissioners then asked questions about immigration and how recent actions impact Mecklenburg County. Here's Commissioner Susan Rodriguez McDowell.
As one of the very, very few Latino elected officials in Mecklenburg County, it's really important to me to learn all that I can. To me, these issues are about real people, like thousands of real people in our community.
Rodriguez McDowell says she's unsure how commissioners can fight against federal and state action during this time, but believes awareness is a step in the right direction. Julian Berger, WFAE News.
The Black Voter Project Group held a town hall Thursday night in East Charlotte to discuss the city's proposed multi-billion dollar transportation plan, which will ultimately require voter approval. Steve Harrison has this report.
The General Assembly in Raleigh hasn't approved a bill for a 1 cent sales tax increase to be placed on the ballot, but some activists are already gearing up for a possible fall referendum, including Colette Forrest, who helped organize the panel of local leaders. Mayor Vi Lyles is one of the plan's biggest defenders. Another panelist, developer Bobby Drakeford, was concerned about the plan's impact on the cost of living and whether the money will be spent equitably. Audience member Kevin Woodson said he supports the transportation plan. He said the bus system needs more frequent service.
But the key thing that I see is we don't see a frequency of transportation. Yes, there are bus lines, but it's 45 minutes between each bus.
Part of the plan would increase bus service on the most heavily used routes to every 15 minutes. Steve Harrison, WFAE News.
The Carolinas LGBT Plus Chamber of Commerce held the grand opening of its Impact Center Thursday evening in West Charlotte. The 2,800-square-foot space will now serve as the home of the chamber, as well as a co-working and training space. Here's the chamber's president and CEO, Chad Turner.
This is definitely a step in the right direction to ensure that our business and professional community, both LGBT and ally, have a space to feel safe, innovate, create, and start their businesses and look for new careers.
The chamber was founded in 1992 and provides support for the LGBT plus and ally business community. The Leon Levine Foundation is increasing its support for its flagship scholarship program at UNC Charlotte. Kenneth Lee has more.
The Levine Scholars Program will continue at UNC Charlotte through at least the 2032-33 academic year, following a nearly $25 million gift from the Leon Levine Foundation. Launched in 2009, the program offers a full four-year scholarship to selected students. Applicants can be nominated by a high school counselor or college advisor, or they may submit a self-nomination. The program currently accepts 20 students per year, with about 80 scholars on campus at any given time. While the new gift will not increase the number of participants, faculty director Heather Smith said it will enhance the student experience.
This gift allows us to make sure that the fuller cost of attendance at the university for the full 4 years, that the fuller cost of their four distinct experiences in the summer is closer to the reality of what that actually costs.
Levine scholars also receive an $8,000 grant to design and complete a community service project. More than 200 alumni have graduated from the program. Kenneth Lee, WFAE News.
The city of Charlotte says some 1,200 gallons of wastewater spilled into a stream running behind the Southampton neighborhood in Ballantyne on Wednesday. The city says the spill was caused by a pipe clogged with grease and other debris. Wastewater can include water flushed from sinks, showers, and toilets. A city spokesperson is reminding residents to please not pour cooking grease down the drain because it can cause clogs. Instead, put it in a container and throw it in the trash. Huge crowds are expected in Uptown Charlotte beginning today for the start of the Love and Life Music Festival. Streets are closed around First Ward Park for the three-day event and may not fully reopen until Tuesday. Love and Life won't be the only event drawing big weekend crowds to Uptown. Kendrick Lamar and SZA also perform at Bank of America Stadium on Saturday, and the ACC Men's Lacrosse Tournament takes place at Memorial Stadium today through Sunday. Five-time Grammy Award-winning jazz artist Samara Joy comes from a family of musicians. Her dad, a bass player, her grandparents led a Philadelphia-based gospel group. Ahead of her show in Charlotte next week, Elvis Meneyese spoke with the Bronx native, who only started singing jazz a few years ago at the age of 18.
You passed me by on a starry night. How could I forget?
Music was a big part of not only my experience in New York, but just in my house, like hearing my dad write songs in his home studio, hearing my family sing together on their, you know, recorded albums, their songs, their demos. So growing up in New York, but especially in my family's, you know, the way that my family is built or set up, it's founded upon our love for music.
Since picking up the genre, you've gone on to receive Grammy Awards, including Best Jazz Vocal Album for Linger a While. The song Can't Get Out of This Mood is one of the tracks that stood out to me. It's a classic jazz standard covered by the likes of Sarah Vaughan, a jazz singer who performed in the 1940s and 50s. So how do you bring your own flavor to the song while still maintaining some of its roots?
I felt like I could sing it differently from how it was recorded. It was by coming up with a different arrangement compared to the recording. And so I would just naturally sort of sing it in a different way and take advantage of the space in a different way.
What does singing it in a different way mean then? How do you do that?
It could mean a couple different things. Like rhythmically, Sarah Vaughan seems to sing it exactly how it was, pretty much exactly how it was written, but maybe I'll sing shorter phrases instead of like holding out every single phrase super long and, you know, elegant and operatically even. I'll sing shorter phrases to sort of interact with the band and give them space to fill in.
On your latest album, Portrait, there's a song titled No More Blues that sounds like it was really fun to produce. What emotions went through you as you recorded the song, and what's the meaning behind it?
The emotion behind it was just wanting to make it as energetic as we do live in the studio, so there's never a gap between the energy that we bring, whether there's a live audience there or not. So yeah, the story behind it is just, I love Brazilian music. That is a song called Chega de Saudade, written by Antonio Carlos Jobim. And the English lyrics are written by a wonderful lyricist named John Hendricks, who is very popular and well-known in the sort of jazz genre. So the point of it was really just to bring energy and sort of put our own twist, our own spin and interpretation on the song.
At the age of 25, you've been described as the person who's bringing jazz to Gen Z. Part of it is tied to you having over 1 million followers across two of your social media sites. Did you ever envision you'd play a role in introducing the genre to your generation?
Never.
You shake your head.
Never, only because I didn't know much about it myself when I got into it. So I really was just focused on learning more about it and learning what I liked about it and trying my best to be the best student possible that I could be.
How do you hope jazz evolves so it can stay meaningful and connect with a young crowd?
I'm in Harlem right now. There used to be clubs just lining, the block every like door to door. And that has faded, you know, because maybe it's because of money. It's because of, you know, landlords and rent and just, you know, people want apartment buildings rather than jazz clubs or, you know, places like that. But hopefully a combination of musicians who have a passion for it, no matter what, you know, environment or situation they're in, combined with the actual market. But I think it's going to move forward. I think it's going to grow no matter what. As long as there are musicians who are alive playing it, it's going to grow.
Samara Joy, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for yours.
That's Samara Joy speaking with our Elvis Mini Essay. You can catch her performance at the Belk Theater on May 7th. And for Friday, May 2nd, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.